My name's Tom Bentren, and it's my honor to call the Grand Junction Regional Airport Authority March 12th, 2024, meeting to order. Would you all join me in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. We'll do a quick roll call for members who are present today. I think we have one of our members online, so we'll start out there. Commissioner Schrader.
Present.
Thank you. Commissioner Davis.
Present.
Commissioner Marshall.
Present.
Commissioner Wrights.
Here.
Commissioner Velarde.
Here.
And Commissioner West.
Here.
Thank you. Appreciate your attendance. And I will ask Cameron to call out our current staff members who are in attendance or online.
Yes, I'd be happy to. So in the room, we have Executive Director Angela Padalecki, Finance and HR Manager Jennifer Croker, Director of Facilities Ben Heck, Director of Operations Dylan Heberlein, and then also we have Office Coordinator Christina Warren, and myself, Cameron Reese, Board Clerk. And I'll let Dylan introduce the other staff member.
Oh, yeah, thank you, Cameron. Then we also have Dylan Peterson, who is our new Airport Security Coordinator and Operations Specialist as well.
And for those of us on the board, since we have two Dylans now, should we go by Pete for you?
Yes, Dylan? Pete.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Nice to have you here. Welcome aboard.
Thank you.
I appreciate that. Also in our attendance today for our guests, I see Sandra Zoldowski. Sandra, nice to have you here. Thank you for being here, representing the Horizon Drive District as our new Executive Director. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Brad Rawls, also here from Meat and Hunt. Welcome, Brad. Good to see you here. Erling Braybach, former Board Commissioner. Thanks for your attendance as well.
Thank you.
On the line, I think we have Scott Sweeney from Westar Aviation. Welcome, Scott. And Jeremy Lee from Meat and Hunt. Do we have anybody else that I've missed, Cameron?
I think you got them all.
Okay, very good. So we do have agendas prepared in front of you. Staff, are there any changes associated with the agenda this morning?
No.
Okay, very good. Commissioners, we do have a couple of consent items on there. Does anybody wish to have those changed at this point? Hearing none, we'll entertain a motion to approve the agendas presented today.
Mr. Chair, I move to approve the consent agenda as presented.
Motion to approve. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, aye. Same sign. Motion carries. Agenda is approved. Commissioner comments.
I have one.
Yes, sir.
As I think most of you might know by now, I'll need to step off the board starting in May. I informed Tom and Angela back in January that I can no longer miss a faculty meeting on Tuesdays, and so I gave them until May to figure out, you know, if I should step off or if there's another alternative time, and they were generously trying to find a time, but nothing worked out, so I will be stepping off in May.
Well, Randall will certainly appreciate your contribution here to the board. I don't know if it'll do any good, but maybe Angela and I can weigh in with your staff and see if they can move that for you. Your staff.
I like that alternative.
Barring that, thank you for your service. And certainly look forward to your continued participation in other matters that affect the airport in the future.
I'll be a great advocate for sure.
Thank you. Additional commissioner comments. Quick thank you to Dylan and your team. I think you had two snowfalls since the last meeting. You kind of handled those okay. Did Mother Nature help with that?
Yeah, this time of year, I'd say Mother Nature is the biggest part of it, but still a little bit of attention on the runway, and also Ben and his team on the early risers that come in for the early departures for the front steps as well.
Well, thank you guys for being prepared for the passengers came through the terminal. A quick thank you to Lindy for covering for me last month. Thank you, Lindy. I heard you guys finished early.
Did we?
Congratulations.
Yeah. We did. So.
I'll take it.
We did.
All right. Nice job.
So, yes, we did.
All right.
I know, Tom, today I have to be out here by 1:30.
So we will endeavor to copy Lindy's attention to time for this meeting. So, citizen comments today. I think we have a couple of folks.
Mr. Chairman, we have two Mr. Braybeck.
Okay.
I'll let them go first and then.
Since Erling's in attendance, we'll have Erling go first and then Scott after that. Okay. Erling, welcome back.
Thank you.
You want to come up this way?
Sure.
We're having technical difficulties with these pucks, so we're going to move that phone.
I can just scoot a little louder. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, he's already started. My name is Erling Braybeck. I'm the Director of Flight Operations for Western Slope Auto and operate one of the two large category airplanes that are here, turbine airplanes. There's two of us. Next month there will be one. And I would like to offer a little bit of insight and comments on the rates and charges with respect to the flowage fee. When you start budget an airline, corporate flight department, charter ops, whatever, fuel is the biggest driver in that economical endeavor. It is the single highest price, beside acquiring the tin cans, is the fuel. Airlines, I understand, they don't pay the fuel flowage fee here, but we have a large income from other people that do come into town, myself included. Fuel is very expensive. I'll just put it as it is here in town, not just because of the flowage fee, but other circumstances. So most of us, we tanker. We rarely buy fuel here, really, because it is so expensive. So we bring it in from somewhere. We came home from Scottsdale last week, and we're sitting with 450 gallons of fuel in the airplane. That'll get us somewhere next. You're about to vote on flowage fee and establishing, I guess, the best of my knowledge, to let it stay or define a 0.20. So Scottsdale is 8 cents per gallon. We're at 20. Aspen is 12 cents per gallon. Jackson Hole is 0.025 flowage fee per gallon. Bozeman is 0.06 per gallon. Arizona as a state has an average of flowage fee of 0.11 or 11 cents per gallon. Durango is 8 cents. Cortez is 12. Canyonlands is 0.065. So I would just like to caution, just because you could, should you have such a high flowage fee when the relationship reverts back to, are we then establishing a 0.20, are we reverting back to 11 cents or 11.7 cents per gallon? Because it all stops with the fuel for us, it's very expensive. And it is getting very expensive to operate in the state of Colorado at this airport, let alone from fees and charges. We'll be here forever. It's not a matter of us, but there are some others that will not. And I would just because you can charge whatever you want, really, with flowage fees, I would just be mindful. You guys are all captains of industry. You're very good at what you do. City councilmen, commissioners, you know how the budgeting works. But at some point, pricing yourself so high is going to chase people away rather than attract them to come to your airport and buy your fuel because it's affordable. So I appreciate your time. Timer's out. Thank you so much, and thank you for what you all did.
Thank you, Erling.
Thanks, Erling. Any questions for Erling before he disappears?
I mean, I did have a question for him.
Yeah, sure.
Do those other airports, they have landing fees for general aviation?
Some do, most of them don't. Some do, some don't. Some are double dipping for landing fee. They're rather small at 25 cents per 1,000 pounds above 12,500. But it's usually either a flowage fee or a landing fee.
Yeah.
Like the airlines pay the landing fee, not flowage. Mm-hmm. GA pay then landing or flowage fee, but not a landing fee.
Okay. Thanks.
Cameron, do you think that we're picking up Erling's comments from back there?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, very good.
Chairman, I have a question.
Sure.
And I guess I'm naive about this because I'm not a pilot, don't fly, but so how do we come up with the amount that we're charging?
So this rate was established in 2007, and initially what Erling's referring to is initially it was about 10.5 cents, and then that was doubled to recoup costs for capital improvements that were made. And that's, so I don't know how it was determined back then, but you know, from our staff's perspective, only Ben on our staff was here But we've looked and said, okay, how does that compare with how other rates and charges have increased? And so, given that the landing fee's gone up 160% since then, it doesn't feel appropriate to decrease it, since it was raised to make capital improvements to the airport, which we continue to make.
Okay, thank you.
I think there'll be a little bit more discussion on this item. I see it as part of our agenda, so we can get into the weeds a little bit more. Earlier, you've shared some very useful information geographically with respect to those fees. And I think we'll hear a little bit more on kind of the hows and whys. Thank you.
Pleasure.
Scott Sweeney, is there any questions for early before we move to Scott? Okay. Scott, welcome. Can you hear us okay?
I can. I can hear you a little bit in the distance, but I've turned my mic up so I can hear you.
Good. Thank you for being here, Scott. Certainly the floor is yours.
Sure thing. No, I really just want to take a quick moment in, and it actually regards to the flowage fees as well. And I understand that flow fees move into capital improvements at the airport, which we utilize as well as other folks. So I do appreciate the spend that's a part of that flow fee. The big thing for me is we're coming up on the military contract. Again, that's a big part of our business here. And a reduction in the fuel flowage fees for the military by a couple of cents will help us, because we have to renegotiate that contract this year. And it's been cited by the military that that's a point they want to discuss. So I wanted to thank you and everybody involved for showing some consideration against the flowage fee for that particular contract. And I can leave it there.
Questions for Scott? Scott, you might, this is probably asking a tall order, but the 2006-07 gallons pumped versus after the rate increase, maybe 2008 or 9, if you do have records and can share that with Angela for future use, that might be of interest to us to see what the impact actually was when we changed the rate on the fuel foliage fee. And that may not
absolutely.
Be.
Okay,
thank
I've
you.
I've got data that stretches that far. I can get that via after the supply.
Okay, yeah, you might let Angela know what that is, just out of curiosity. Anything else for Scott today? Thank you for your attendance. Appreciate your comments. Okay, any other citizen comments that may have come in?
Mr. Chairman, we have no other citizen comments.
All right, very good. We do have a consent agenda today. It's a February 13th minute meeting. Thank you again, Lindy.
Yes, absolutely.
Our Title VI non-discrimination policy is updated. Thank you, Dan. I don't know that I called Dan out, but Dan Reimer is also on. Dan Reimer, excuse me. Also is on our call. Thank you for being here. And last month, I believe you guys covered the airport goals. Okay. So those two are on the agenda.
Last month was a long time ago.
Especially when you have four kids. So that's our consent agenda today. Are there any items on there that commissioners would wish to be pulled and discussed during the regular meeting session? Hearing none, entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda.
So moved.
Been moved. Is there a second?
Second.
Moved and seconded. Further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of approving the consent agenda as presented, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same
aye.
Sign. Thank you, Thaddeus. Motion carries. All right. Our main action item today is the resolution number 2024-02, rates and charges. Okay, Angela.
Great. It was in everyone's board packet, but want to make sure that it's clear right now. And big thanks to Erling for bringing this to our attention and what it looks like from a pilot's perspective years ago. Right now, if you are a pilot and you come to Grand Junction and you purchase fuel, you pay a 20 cent and change, but a 20 cent fuel flowage fee. And in our published rates and charges, it says you pay a 10 cent fuel flowage fee. And so, now first, staff recommends just reconciling that so that it's more clear to users. If they want to look and see what the fuel flowage fee is in the airport, it's clear. That's the purpose of the rates and charges document. So that's something I wish I would have thought of a long time ago, back when Erling brought it to our attention. Didn't, but want to reconcile that now. And then second, we benchmarked against many airports, and I'll go over that in a minute, but one of the things we found is that many airports discount fuel for military. And as Scott mentioned, that military refueling contract, it comes up for bid every 5 years. And so that's not, that is contracted with the federal government. Fuel sold to the military represents just over 40% of our fuel flowage fees typically. And so unlike some of the other customers, that contract, it's important to Westar's business. It's really important to ours too. I mean, it's binary. You have that contract or you don't have that contract. And last time when they proposed, it was highlighted how high that fuel flowage fee was compared to some of the other airports where military refueling happens. And so Westar actually had to come to us for us to certify that they weren't, that it truly is the rate that's charged to the military. So working with our partners at Westar, they came to us and said, hey, we're working on our bid. Could you discount it just for the military? Because that way, you know, it demonstrates that the airport, the collective airport team, really, you know, is all in on this bid. And so that's our recommendation when it comes to the military side. From a cost perspective, last year we would have given up about $25,000 in revenue if we had sold the same amount of military fuel but had this lower fuel flowage fee. And so it's a lot of money, but it's not too much money. It's really, I don't feel like we're leaving anything on the table, and it feels like the right thing to do.
Sorry, Thaddeus just lost audio, so that's why.
Oh, I'm sorry. I can repeat anything I just said. I also wanted to mention just a couple things about the benchmarking when it comes to our fuel flowage fee overall. So we are on the higher end. We are not the highest, but on the higher end as we researched. Locally, there are other airports that are comparable to ours with fuel flowage fees, like Rifles at 19 cents. Aspen charges a fuel flowage fee and a landing fee. See more and more of that. But ACMG, who is a company you all, you know, for those who've been on the board a while might sound familiar, they're the ones who came and helped us with our minimum standards. They commissioned a study a couple of years ago to really look nationally at average fuel flowage fees, and they said that they typically range from 5 cents to 40 cents per gallon. Wisconsin DOT surveyed all of their airports in 2022, and the average fuel flowage fee for Jet A was 24 cents a gallon. For Avgas, it was 20, and we found, you know, airports a little bit all over the spectrum, but we are on that higher end. One thing I will also mention is, as we called airports, almost every airport we talked to said, oh, well, we're planning to increase our fuel flowage fee, because, I mean, costs are going up for everyone, and everyone's investing in the airfield. So the big thing is, from our perspective, we're looking and saying, how are we going to be financially sustainable, and that we talk about a lot at the airport, and as well as fairness and equity. I mentioned that we've increased landing fees 160% since 2007 on the airlines. For that fuel flowage fee, it's been held flat, but fuel sales have risen, right? So that's where total revenues to the airport have grown, and so for us, I feel confident that at the current levels we can continue forward in a financially sustainable way. That's what we've assumed in all of our long-term financial planning. We've just held that landing fee flat, or excuse me, that fuel flowage fee flat, whereas on the airline side, the airlines have a methodology where we will continue to recover costs. So as our costs continue to go up, as we have assets come online, those will hit the rate base once the asset comes online, and their costs will continue to go up. So it doesn't feel appropriate to, from my perspective, to decrease a fee right now when all the other fees at the airport have been going up and our investments continue to grow.
Okay, appreciate that background, Angela. And I noticed on the goals that you had set forth, and I apologize for not being here, but other matters deserved attention. Number three has an RFI for additional hangar space, which generally speaking FAA doesn't fund for us, And to me, that might be one of many areas that we can invest for potential new corporate aircraft here to enhance that revenue down the road as we make way for GA expansion. And as you think a little bit about CapEx that isn't covered by FAA grants that these fuel foliage could be used for, maybe reacquaint us with what that might look like, that space.
Yeah, so well, I mean, first we just invested about $1 million of airport revenues in our rehabilitation of 422 and Taxley and Charlie 1 Alpha. You know, with the runway program going on, we will likely invest close to $20 million on our replacement runway project. We have an air traffic control tower that was built in 1961 that needs rehabilitation, and there is not a defined revenue source for that from a grant funding perspective. So those are kind of the three big things first. And then we have that airport development plan that we want to activate. You know, and we know that site prep is a barrier when it comes to development at the airport, and that costs money. And so, and I think that's what you're alluding to, is, you know, we have to make sure that we leave on the table those opportunities for us to continue to grow. One thing I want to mention too is when it comes to us being on the higher end, of course, that's not where we want to be, but I want to recognize that we are not talking pure apples to apples when we compare airports either. The airport infrastructure we have here is absolutely incredible for an airport our size. We have an air traffic control tower. We have a very big runway that's well maintained, plus a secondary runway that just got rehabilitated. Those three things alone are really special. And so when it comes to the facilities, you know, us being on the higher end, but pilots coming in and being able to see the airport that they're at, and I'll add to that, the fueling infrastructure is incredible as well. So, you know, within the region, virtually all of the airports, if not all of them, run out of fuel sometimes. We hear about it. Knock on wood, never have we run out of fuel in my 6 years here. And Westar continues to make investments in the fuel farm, and we work with them to make, you know, to take care of the infrastructure. Between the Westar as the FBO and the airport, it's our job to make sure that we have all the facilities that our general aviation community needs to be successful.
So 40% of fuel foliage fees is what? About $90,000 for military, roughly, would that be close?
More than that. Sorry, let me look at that real quick. You always have like really tricky word math problems.
I was thinking I saw something about $244,000 of fuel flowage.
So last year, fuel flowage fees were almost $520,000.
Okay.
And military was almost half of that.
Okay, so a couple hundred thousand. That was your notes. Was
that's right. Your couple hundred thousand was right. It was just... That's the military piece, not the total.
Yeah, that's a pretty big number.
That's on a negotiated rate, too.
No, so right now we have a flat fuel flowage fee that no matter what, if you're taking fuel and you're not a commercial airline, you pay that fuel flowage fee. And so what we're proposing is a slightly reduced fuel flowage fee just for military. And so that is all fuel flowage fees, so military plus GA.
But they're currently paying the 20%.
They're currently paying the 20 cents, yeah.
But on our rates and charges document online, it shows 10%.
They're paying 10 cents, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's where, but the airport, Westar isn't doing anything dishonest. Like, you know, we've looked back to all the agreements, and really I think what happened is it didn't get picked up in the rates and charges resolution in 2007. That change didn't get made, and so, you know, we continue to charge this 10 cent fuel flowage fee that was intended to just cover the basic operating costs of the airfield, and didn't incorporate in the documentation that 10 cent to invest in capital improvements.
So people see the rates online and then they get a receipt that shows the 20%.
Yes. Yeah.
And nobody's made an issue about this?
20 cents.
Per gallon.
Yeah, it's 20 cents per gallon. Sorry, I won't make sure.
I'm sorry. Yes, 20 cents per gallon. I said percent. 20 cents per gallon.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, the way it was brought to our attention was actually early when he was on the board. He was like, did you guys know this? I'm like, no, I didn't know that that's how they charge it. Because from our perspective, Westar just remits to us the fuel flowage fee that we expect, which is 20 cents.
So there's kind of two accounts, it sounds like. There's like the basic account, and there's also the upgrade account, the 10 cents and 10 cents. Is that how it's recorded, or is it?
It's not really. really how it's recorded, so, you know, it just gets remitted to us as that combined 20 cent charge, and it gets treated as general airport revenues. And, you know, the merits for why it increased, you know, that's clear, but then the airport just continued to make investments. And on the airline rates and charges side, the airlines actually, based on our methodology, they will cover all the costs of the whole airfield. And then we will discount those calculated rates and charges somewhat based on the revenues we generate. And so it kind of all goes into that bucket, and that's what we end up charging them. And so that's the other reason why, you know, not only does it not feel fair, frankly, to, you know, not continue to charge at least the fuel flowage fee we've charged as we're making, you know, the biggest capital investments in airport history, but if we reduce the fuel flowage fee, it would be the airlines who directly.
Is there any direct operating cost tied to the fuel flowage fee, payroll, anything?
No.
It's really pure margin.
Yeah, because we just operate it with such a slim operation,
yep.
You know. There are periods of time where Dylan's team out there, we only have one person.
Yeah.
So we try to keep costs as low as possible. We don't want to cost it be any higher than we need to be. And so that's where, you know, we have a little bit of a lot of things at the airport, and it all works together to make things more financially efficient.
Additional questions for?
Nope. They answered my question. Angela. Thank you.
Scott, are you still on the line? Can you still hear us?
I can. Yes.
Okay. So I appreciate Angela's efforts to assist in the military contract that's coming up for you. I know Westar does a marvelous job of servicing those aircraft when they come in here with hot fuel capacity, filling an F-18 while the engines are still running, and a number of other amenities that you provide to the pilots. Is it your sense that offering an 18 cent number plus the pizza that you give them, is that going to be able to win the contract over again?
We're hopeful because we are one of the only civilian operations, or very few can provide a hot refuel, which is a nice thing for the military. We haven't entered into the negotiations yet. They have brought that up as a point to discuss. We think with the relationships and the different things and our hot fuel capability, I think we can get over the hump with 18 cents. We're hopeful on it, but I haven't entered into the negotiation yet, so I'm a little unsure.
And then Scott, just for my edification, how often are you renegotiating that contract with the government?
I think it's a 5-year deal.
5-year, okay, thank you.
I'll have to verify that, but I think it's...
Yeah, multi-year is helpful, thank you.
Yeah, I know you and Angela have worked on this, and we certainly, $225,000 of revenue, that's leverageable to the airport, that military piece, so we're very hopeful that that gets renewed for your benefit as well as ours.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that, and I'll keep Angela posted as we move into the negotiations coming up too.
Very good, thank you. Okay, additional thoughts on this item? Thaddeus, you used to be a pilot. Any comments? Can we still hear you?
Yeah, I think this goes back to what I was talking about in last month's board meeting, just the concern about the cost increase and pilots deciding to go elsewhere during their travels. And so that's just from a GA perspective, though. And I think Erling inadvertently kind of, he had a very similar perspective where they're just choosing to tanker fuel. So I personally don't like that we're one of the highest priced airports, but I do see that we are trying to make, we're pushing that capital into improvements which will serve everybody for quite a bit of time. If there was any way we could sneak it down just the tiniest bit, that could be amazing.
Okay, thank you for for your thoughts there as well. I think a lot of considerations gone into this issue from airport staff and our users, and I certainly recognize Erling's point. I don't know that we've done the math on if we charged a landing fee as an offset, how much of that would replace. If the net number that we're getting from the GA world is $300,000, what is that on the number of gallons? It's not that many gallons sold, right? So when you think about from an economics perspective, there's certainly some advantage by not having the landing fee and picking up a little extra on fuel flowage fee, perhaps. So thank you for your research along those lines. Okay, entertaining a motion relative to resolution 2024-02, rates and charges.
Mr. Chair, I'll put forth a motion to adopt resolution number 2024-02, rates and charges. Adoption resolution number 2024-02, rates and charges, effective May 1st, 2024.
Second that.
It's been moved and seconded. Further discussion? Hearing none, we'll do a roll call vote. Commissioner Davis?
Aye.
Commissioner Wright?
Yes.
Commissioner West?
Aye.
Commissioner Marshall?
Yes.
Commissioner Velarde?
Yes.
Commissioner Schrader?
Aye.
All right, motion carries. Thank you very much. Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
I'm sorry?
You need to call your vote.
Oh, the chair votes on approval as well. Thank you for the reminder. All right, again, thank you for your efforts on that, and I appreciate the lens, Erling, that you bring to this as well. All right, staff reports.
Erling.
Executive Director's report, coming up first.
Yes. Before I get into those, I have a few that are not on site, so wanted to thank Erling for his engagement and really helping us understand this better as staff and how it works. So, second, wanted to congratulate Dylan and his team, as well as Brad and his team, on a successful construction weekend. So this was that big weekend that Colin briefed the board on last month, where we displaced the threshold and did a whole bunch of stuff out, well, in preparation for a whole bunch of stuff over the next month related to relocating the nav aids and things. Is there anything you want to add to that, Dylan? I know we don't have you on the agenda, but I want to give you the opportunity.
No, I had a chance to talk to Brad ahead, and I think both sides were really happy with how it went. It's a large undertaking to move a threshold on a runway that needs to be open in 6 hours, and that's what we did. So we'll do it one more time here in a few more weeks as we progress forward, but yeah, we're extremely happy, and everything is going as planned out there, which is fantastic, especially from an ops perspective, because we always hope for the best and plan for the worst, and right now everything is going really well. So.
Can you describe what it means to move? I mean, are you painting lines? What are you doing?
So you're doing a lot of painting. So you're erasing the existing lines, and then you're moving the beginning of the runway further down. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, we don't have the pleasure of having a parallel runway that would allow us to just operate on while we shut the other one down. So after you have your last scheduled arrival come in around midnight, you shut it all down, and then you basically deploy an army of people to go out to cover up the markings that won't be relevant during that time, and then paint new ones to basically establish a new beginning of the runway, and then come 6:30 the following morning, it was legal from an FAA standpoint, safe from an FAA standpoint, ready to go.
So you're a GA airport, so the tower shuts down at that time, but aircraft are still allowed to come in, aren't they?
So the great thing about that with rehabilitating 422 last year is it remained open that whole time. So there were still runways available, and that's something we're really sensitive to, especially for St. Mary's and Care Flight,
true,
to have those critical flights still operate while we're closed. So,
Dylan, do you want to describe briefly how it works? So the tower closes at 10, and obviously lots of flights, GA and commercial, come in after that and before they open again at 6. Do you want to
Yeah, so the tower closes, and then from there, it becomes an uncontrolled airspace, and it's really just really announcing your intentions as a pilot when you come in, whether you're airline or even a small Cessna. So that's where a large part on our part is to put out the notices to air missions to tell the world, hey, this is what's going on with the runway at this time. You know, we're being a little brief about the painting because the other part of it is redoing all the electrical work out there because the lighting that goes with the runway, that all is reconfigured as well. That was another part of the undertaking out there. So after the tower closes, it's a little different ballgame out there. So you just have to be a little bit more on your game with the communication and just making sure the flying world understands what's going on out there. But that's why we're really happy to have 422 because that's when it's a very instrumental runway for those situations.
And we're so lucky to have the tower. There's not a lot of airports in this area who have a tower. I mean, Montrose doesn't have a tower. I don't think Hayden has a tower.
They want one.
Gunnison doesn't have a tower. And not only do we have a tower, but we have a tower that's well-staffed. So maybe not always, you know, the warmest, fuzziest people, you know, because their job is a really serious one and it's a serious thing. But I compare that to some of the other airports that have towers in the region. I don't want to name them, but they've really struggled with staffing their towers. And so, there's kind of a plan for each level, but, you know, we're just spoiled in having that capability. But wanted to just give kudos to the team for, you know, the execution that happened this weekend, and then also the plan, because trying to grow our air service while trying to replace our primary runway is a task. And, you know, they worked really hard, and we didn't have flights. In fact, it worked really hard and closely with the airlines for a long time, and some of them waited longer than others to make changes at the end, which nothing stresses out ops and the engineers like people problems when they're planning this stuff, right? It's like, wait, but we already did this. So it all came together, and I'm really, really proud, and I wanted to make sure I shined a light on that for the board because I think we should all feel proud.
Just understanding the level of technicality that went into that, you know, less than 12-hour lift. I ran into Brandon at the grocery store on Saturday, and I was like, you look tired. He's like, we did it. It was all-nighter. We did it. And anyway, according to plan, he was like high-fiving me.
Oh, yeah.
So stoked.
And I think that's a special call out to Brandon because Brandon was the one that stepped up and was like, I'm going to stay overnight, brought some of the newer staff along. So it's not very often you do this, the exception being that we actually did this twice in the past year. We also did it for the 422 project, so we had a little bit of practice, which was good. But, a special call out to him, especially for sticking around with all the setups that were out there making it possible. So
great job. So one more to go, right?
Yep, one more to go, and then that will be it until the new runway.
And that's where, you know, there'll be little things as we work through projects, like, you know, the weather reporting system, for example. You know, the automated weather reporting system, when the tower closes, you're relying on that system. Well, that system has to move and is impacted at certain times. So Dylan, you know, had the idea, really good idea, to get his team certified as like certified weather observers so that they can fill in, because we're here, right? We always have someone here. They can fill in when that closes. And so, you know, trying to get those timelines to align. But I'm just really proud of the optimization that's happening, you know, on, because the easy button is to just close the runway for, like, plan for a really long closure and then get it done and, you know, be done. But we had a challenge to not impact flights, and I think they pulled it off. So. On that note, I guess it's just Dylan meeting, but I wanted to also recognize Dylan is the vice chair of the Colorado Airport Operators Association Board, and it has been, he didn't know this when he signed up for that job, the timing of things really aligned where there's a lot of bills going through the state right now that impact airports, and so really appreciate Cody stays like completely up on that stuff and has reached out to me several times on different issues to see, hey, how does this impact the airport? Want to make sure the board knows that, you know, whenever possible, we really just work through the Colorado Airport Operators Association on legislative issues because so far, at least, I haven't found one issue where it only negatively would affect us. Usually it's airports kind of all together. It impacts us in similar ways. And so that has been our strategy. If you have any questions on any of that legislative stuff, we're happy to talk to you about it. But I wanted to recognize how much work Dylan's putting in. And, you know, when he went to school to be a pilot and then aviation management, I'm not sure if working on these bills was what he had in mind, but we really appreciate it, so thank you. And then last, on the airport goals, thank you so much to the board for your support and, you know, for us having that aligned vision. I wanted to call out one small change we made that didn't feel worthy of calling out and pulling it off consent, but, you know, what you approved versus what you saw is we made one small change to add creating a 10-year CIP to our goal list. It's not one of our top goals, but it's on there and it's a really important one. So when we think 10 years into the future, the runway's done. Right, Brad?
Don't laugh like that, Brad.
But the runway's done. And so I just think it's so important because the runway project casts this really huge shadow. And for me, it's like, yeah, but that there's stuff on the other side of that shadow now, and we need to be planning for that, and I want to make sure we're teed up, and that we really have fleshed out everything we need to be doing, kind of bringing the airport development plan to life and moving forward. So that little change on there, you know, I'm really excited about, and Colin is too, I know. The whole team is, but we're the ones who are pretty obsessed with it right now, so I want to make sure I call that out. And then most of my report is actually on air service stuff, because it's been a really busy air service month. Thank goodness we got an extra day in February. since we last met, we had quite a few airline meetings, and all of them went well. So want to kind of brief the board on how things are looking, and then kind of get into more specifics about individual airlines and about kind of how the summer is looking. So 2024 is scheduled to be a top year. So we have an airport goal. Our top airport goal is to have it be the busiest year in airport history. And so far, the schedules are shaking out to make that a possibility. So Q2 2024 is scheduled to be we have more seats scheduled than any second quarter in airport history. So as you all will recall, and you can kind of see on this graph, typically the dip in the first quarter can be pretty deep. First quarter is our weakest quarter, but you know, as I've told the airlines, it's not as weak as it looks. It's just there hasn't been enough capacity. Last year we saw the airlines add a lot of capacity and we saw the community respond. This year, as Americans made some changes at DFW with what they're doing in the wintertime, we saw our DFW flights drop to 2 per day. Happy to report those are returning at 3 per day starting in May. But that has to do more with, it's really fascinating, in the winter, most travel patterns, like, they tend to flow north and south, right? People go from cold to warm and home. And like, that's how the travel patterns flow. And then once the warm season starts, it starts getting really east-west flow. And so with that north-south flow, we don't play a big part in that, right? Thank goodness, because I don't think I would want to work here, no offense, but if we were like in Minnesota and it was cold, that's not the home for me. But like, you know, for those freezing up in the north, they want to go defrost out in the south. So we've worked with them to really boost that first quarter. Now we're seeing that second quarter come up too, and that's obviously helped with that DFW capacity coming back, plus Breeze. And then United continues to stay at their strong spot. So next slide. I promised you last meeting you weren't here, Tom, but I promised that we're going to stop just talking about compared to 2019. So, giving you some new views because we are at a new normal. So, United is driving a lot of that growth. So, you can see here, United is up 33% versus last year in the first half of 2024, just versus last year. But they're up 130% versus pre-pandemic. So they are really driving that growth, and that growth is driven by higher gauge, so larger airplanes. We expect them to continue to grow here. So far, they've indicated that they intend to stay at 2 main lines daily. So we talk about the Airbus 319, but fortunately, things are going so well that they're not just using a 319. We regularly see them using 320s, sometimes 321s, and then when they can, they'll even put a 737-800 on there. So when we're talking about seats, smallest is the 319 at 126, biggest is the 737-800 at 160. So big airplanes, but even within that, a lot of variability. So consistent recently planning to offer 5 daily flights. They're bringing a 6th flight starting in August, and I'm really excited about that. I'm hoping that if that performs well, they'll keep it. So that 6th flight, it really fills a hole in the schedule that we've had since the pandemic. And really, it for me, it represents like full recovery to what our business travelers were used to before, because we used to have 2 remain overnights, or RONs is what we call them, come in from Denver. So 2 airplanes stay here. Hub and spoke model, the best way to think of it is airplanes sleep at spokes and then come into hubs for that first bank, right? Makes sense. So we would have 2. We've only had 1 coming in, and that last departure has been in the 7 o'clock hour out of Denver. So if you're making a day trip to Denver, you know, you can't have dinner in Denver and make that flight unless you eat at the airport, right? Like with your clients or whatever. So that extra flight they've added is a 9 p.m. departure. It's almost their last departure of that last bank, which I love because it stretches the schedule as much as they can. And so it comes in, and then it leaves at 5:30 a.m. So that early, early departure has been missing on United's schedule too. So we keep that mainline RON that comes in, it arrives here about 8 p.m. and departs about 7 a.m. to hit that eastbound bank, but we're getting back that other RON that actually it gets us there earlier, hits the full bank structure. So really excited. That one's scheduled to be a regional, but really that six flights a day is what we need. Sorry, taking a long time to describe it, but 6 flights a day is huge for United. For me, the threshold is we want frequency over gauge with United at least until we hit 6 per day. We hit 6 per day in that banking structure, you can make a good day trip. Like, the arrival time is before 7 a.m. now in Denver. Like, you can make it to the Capitol for 9 a.m. and you can make it home for dinner. And you have options. You have all these different time channel options to come home. So, sorry to point at you. You're sitting next to me. So.
How does that affect your TSA and Ben's staffing for that 5:30?
Well, we already have a 5:30 departure to DFW, so it works out just fine. Okay. And you know, there's a system that is fairly rudimentary, but works pretty well between airlines and TSA at most airports. And the airlines, you know, they have they have incentive to provide accurate information to TSA about their flight times and expected passenger loads, because that way they can respond with adequate staffing. For us, our staffing levels don't really look different.
Okay.
So it'll look like a normal day. This is normal people.
Pretty much. It's about 3 months ago or so. We had the airline shift the earlier departures. So we started helping the terminal rolling up so we could meet that requested 2-hour minimum prior to departure. So right now we're open the terminal rolling at 3:30. We're staying open until midnight or until after the last commercial.
I guess my question was more focused on TSA, because I don't feel like they're fully staffed at 5:30 in the morning for that flight. But now you double the number of passengers going through the checkpoint. Are they kind of aware of the additional flight?
They're aware. And these kind of bigger things we talk to the management about too, and we're lucky because the regional manager who oversees basically outside of Denver, Colorado Springs, all of the checkpoints, she's officed here. So, yeah, we'll make sure that they're well aware, but they should be staffed. The morning departures are harder too, because the arrival curve is what we call it. It's a lot shorter than the morning, right? Like, you know, yeah. if you're running ahead of, well, how often are you running ahead of schedule for 5:30? Like, never. So, you know, but even still, like, if you're ever going to push it, it's in that morning hour. Well, you and everyone else on the plane, right? And then maybe TSA is more tired. My guess is the throughput rate is not maybe as high either, but it tends to also have more sophisticated travelers, you know, going through it. So, not worried about that. Excited about it.
Congratulations on that. Let's hope they extend the 9/25 date through Christmas.
Oh yeah, and that's where you know, reach out to them. It's reflective of their expanded banking in Denver, which really excites me, and that has to do with the gates finally coming online that they've been building for a long time, and all those resources coming together. I mean, it's a system, and so we're in close communication with United. So I'm hopeful that we're going to be able to keep that as long as it's successful. So, I'll also say, actually, before I move away from United, when it comes to Delta and that conversation, United's success is a real feather in our cap when we're talking to Delta. Mm-hmm. Because because, you know, Delta obviously isn't in the market, but Delta or SkyWest, what we've been able to demonstrate is for all the reasons the service was successful before, those all still exist. And all of them, virtually all of them are better. None of them are worse out of those metrics. And, you know, when you have those larger aircraft type, the revenue potential for an airline is much higher. So, you know, we're able, I mean, it's public information, we're able to see United making much better money off those more premium products that are offered. And that, there's a big, I mean, I think the Wall Street Journal has had several articles lately on this. There's just a huge competition underway right now for that more premium traveler between the airlines. And I think a lot of the focus is actually on clubs, airline clubs, if you've been to any recently. It's pretty wild.
Wow, that's
but,
insane.
Yeah, I mean, United just opened their biggest hub, or their biggest club ever in the Denver airport, in these players lounges and things. So, really good news when it comes to conversations with Delta, because that, United and Delta in particular, that really matters to their strategy very much. So, American is stable, but they've just been more conservative with their growth. We know that they were down the first half of this year, but you know, we're going to be back at that 3 flights per day to DFW and to Phoenix. We expect those to stay on regionals. We don't know exactly what airlines will do, but you know, our crystal ball is more well-informed than some industries because number one, we can look at their airline orders or their aircraft orders. So American's really betting on regionals, and they have new orders in for E175s. Those are like the nice regional airplanes you get on here that you get on, you're like, oh, this feels like a little version of an Airbus, and that's exactly what it is. So that's really what they're betting on, and they're betting on, actually, if I'm going to the next slide, I think, that last bullet during their Investors Day recently, and, you know, they were talking about how their strategy is to offer a superior network to more cities than any other carrier. And they actually had Grand Junction on the map as one of those airports where they do that. Like, you know, they're the only airline here that offers service to two hubs. And so they want to continue to do that. And that's much harder if your airplanes double in size, like you see with the main lines. So that's one where we'll, you know, just strategically, I mean, Harrison and I, a couple times a year, have a long workshop to really flush through our strategy for the next 6 months. We just had one. And, you know, following all these meetings, and we look at our strategy with American, it's really just continuing to grow frequency to those major hubs. I mean, it's so valuable being connected to those hubs. Charlotte is their kind of the Phoenix equivalent of the East Coast for them, but Charlotte, you have to take a mainline. So when it comes to just realistic expectations, when we talk about, you know, those adding hubs to the east, Charlotte is a much harder add than it might look if you just look at the hub map for American Airlines. So. All right. Last breeze, we're a month in, and you know, we have this perfect display for you here. And hopefully that loading bridge is just full of passengers getting on. Their bookings got off to a slow start. That's pretty normal, especially if you launch service in February. But they're saying that, especially for summer, the bookings look really good on both SFO and SNA. So we're excited about that, and you know, hopeful that that service will be successful so they can continue to grow and expand it. Historically, service to the LA area has a lot more seasonality than other markets for us, and that's why you've seen Allegiant serve it just in that summer seasonal way. They've tried it year-round, and it didn't work as well. So I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, depending on how bookings look, if, you know, next winter, I'd be happy actually if the SNA service stays at least twice weekly. I think that's a huge win for us to be able to maintain that year-round service, and then we can grow in frequency and flex from that 2 to 3 times weekly. Allegiant still has their Vegas service. LAX returns this summer. They don't have any Phoenix Mesa loaded. They've had some pretty major constraints on the aircraft pilot side that seem, you know, that are getting a lot better. And so we'll be meeting with them again to talk about Phoenix Mesa later this summer. Right now, so
survey the group here. Who has seen a Breeze advertisement since they've started here locally promoting the routes to Orange County? Is that a billboard or what is it?
Facebook.
Facebook? Mm-hmm. Facebook?
That's that one, social media.
Social media?
There's a radio ad.
I heard it on the radio.
Okay.
And there's a bench you'll walk by too.
Yeah. Sandy, have you seen anything?
No, I have not.
The business times that you guys have added that flight onto that 7 or 8 column list of destinations, is that right?
I think so. And so that's right too. The marketing for the routes, the airport is prohibited from marketing routes.
Right. I understand. I'm just
because
our
that,
partners,
the Air Service Alliance,
right?
Is yeah.
Our
and
partners that we touch.
Yeah.
With, throughout your business contacts.
I've only seen it in the business times. I'm not half page ad.
I feel there's opportunity to improve the messaging still around that. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, between collectively all of us can push folks that are in that industry to kind of help out with it. Because we need Breeze going to the West Coast.
Absolutely. So.
All right. Sorry for the interruption.
No,
that's just my perception because I haven't seen much.
And we know you're not in charge of that, but
right.
I think it's interesting.
Oh, yeah, no, but we're still helping and we want to see it be successful. We just
yeah.
can't get zero revenues on it.
Yeah. There's a number of folks in this room that have a lot of connectivity. So when you have to have that cup of coffee with somebody that's kind of involved in that, let's continue beating the drum for Breeze if we can.
And I do think after spring break, the community will start hearing it. There's a lot of families flying out in spring break.
Okay.
A lot.
Oh, good. Yeah, and that's where too. I think things like JUCO offer unique opportunities for the airport to really showcase what's available right now. So with them too. Not necessarily even just about route specific, but just overall.
Thank
all
you.
Right. So when it comes to where we have, I want to make sure that the board always knows where we have destination, where we have service to. So this summer we'll have nonstop service to 7 destinations. So these are the destinations Cameron will send this out. But I just want to make sure you know, and we'll have a map of that too. That wasn't the map that we made. We made one of the nonstop or the one-stop connections. So next slide. Because the strength of our market is not just the nonstops, it's really in the hubs we're connected to. To be connected to 3 hubs is really valuable. You can go a lot of places. So this summer, you'll be able to, you know, we have one-stop access to 191 destinations. And that excludes the duplicates, which is why 147 plus 132 plus 54 equals 191.
Fair enough.
What'd you say?
He was doing the math.
Thank you for the clarification.
I know that math doesn't add up because they're the unique destinations, but you know what that looks like on a map is so much connectivity you can't see it, frankly. So you want to go to the next slide. So you know when you look at just how many places you can go from Grand Junction this summer with only one stop, we're really proud of that. We want it to continue to grow, but there aren't many more than 200 domestic destinations that anyone goes to, really, with air service. And so, you know, you can go just about anywhere with domestically with one connection, and you can get to quite a few places internationally. I'm going to zoom into the here and now, so if anyone, any other questions on air service development? So passenger volumes, they're lower right now, but not concerningly low. Like, they're a normal level of low for January, February. And it looks about the same as last year, and that is capacity's up only 5% in February, or was up 5%, despite Breeze adding service, because we're missing that daily, one of those daily BMW flights. Next slide. So, wanted to touch on other airports for a moment. So, Dorian, you with the graph, the light blue is March 2024. The medium blue is June, and the dark blue is September. These are airline schedules, and you see the airports on the bottom. The graph on the left shows scheduled seats. The graph on the right shows scheduled departures. And what we wanted to show is a few things. So first, you know, wanted to just give you this picture of what's going on in the region, and in you know, kind of the year to come as we see it. Fourth quarter schedules are not real yet. the airports that support resorts have a bunch of air service in March. Makes sense, right? But for me, I like getting to see the scale. And so in seats, you can see that it's huge. In number of flights, it's less huge, except in Aspen. This is why. Bigger airplanes, right? Bigger airplanes to all of these other resort airports you see. In Aspen, only CRJ-700s go there. So it's pretty much one for one, right? Like, you don't have, the airport has severe limitations on what type of aircraft it can take, such as the only commercial aircraft that can fly to Aspen. For us, you see, we have steady, you know, we look steady. We're gonna peak in the summer a little bit, but the peak is just a little bit. And because of upgauging, you see that it's a peak in the seats, but our daily departures is relatively flat. So. I figured, I like getting to look back at that graph, so wanted you guys to have it. Wanted to talk a little bit about what we're seeing. So thank you to Christina for going down and giving final numbers today from the rest of the airlines for February. So happy to report that February was even busier than last February. But when you control for leap day, it was basically flat. So it's amazing what an extra day can do. So as you look at February stats, as one, you know, from my data soapbox, remember February had an extra day. So for something that was up 4% year over year, just an extra day.
Makes sense.
But we do still get credit for it. So anyway, busy February, and we are hopeful that March, we would love to see March look similar to February, about those same levels as last year, and then really see things take off as we get into April, based on schedules and growth being work forecast. All right, any questions on?
Looks good, thank you, Angela. Appreciate that. Looked like 298 passengers flew on February 29th on that. That's kind of the differential there. So. All right.
Yeah. Well, that was the budget, actually. That just reflects the conservatism of the budget.
Okay. Very good. Jennifer, thank you for being with us today. I look forward to your report.
And then the accounts receivable and accounts payable then you'll see, I guess, the operating part of accounts payable and accounts receivable just fluctuates also with, you know, the spending and the timing of the invoices throughout the year. So that goes up and down. Any questions on how we're doing so far?
Looks good, Jennifer. Thank you for this. Commissioners, any questions for Jennifer? I like the cash on hand days. That's pretty healthy. Thank you. All right. That concludes your report, sounds like. Thank you for putting the efforts into preparing that for us today. Any other business that might come before the board today? Okay. Appreciate being so organized. Next part of our board meeting will be an executive session, so we'll excuse all bodies except for Angela for a little bit here. I do need a motion for us to go into executive session.
Mr. Chairman, I will make a motion to go into executive session for the purpose of considering personnel matters as authorized by Colorado Revised Statute Section 24-6-402, subsection 4F, specifically including the executive director's annual review and employment contract.
Is there a second?
Second.
Very good. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Thank you, Thaddeus. Dan, please stay with us as well. Motion carries. We're now moving into executive session.